Problem is, when people learn that role, they think they understand progesterone. Instead, progesterone is a thyroid gland, fat metabolism, energy, muscle building. Just imagine all the things. It's during pregnancy that you can burn your body fat to help the baby grow. Estrogen helps you when you're not pregnant, so that you turn food into body fat. So that gives you a survival benefit during times of famine. Women will outlive men if they live in a society that has occasional famine. Mother Nature is very clever. But when you're pregnant, you want to be able to use that energy for the baby. And that's the role of progesterone. There are so many roles. It causes hydration, proper water in the skin. It protects the cell membranes, so the cell membranes can keep sodium out and allow potassium, magnesium to come into the cell. It maintains the intracellular concentration of the good minerals and keeps out the sodium. So otherwise, if the sodium comes in, then water comes in, and then you get swelling. Did you know that on all these synthetic progestins, we've got to be clear, there's a little semantic problem that doctors have with this. Progesterone, as you all know, is the name of the hormone made by the corpus luteum, the follicle that has released the egg. The ovary makes progesterone. What I did, here it is, on my book, I put that molecule right there. That is progesterone. Nothing else is. When the companies want to give you some progesterone, something with progesterone activity, they go back to the discovery that Dr. Russell Marker made in 1938. He found that in plants, there are fats and oils called saponins, where the word sap comes from. These are fats and oils that plants make. Now, the plants don't make cholesterol like humans do, other animals do, but they make sterols that are very similar. Plants don't make real progesterone. They make fats and oils that are very similar to this molecule. And one in particular is called diosterone. And in 1938, Dr. Russell E. Marker, down in the middle of America someplace, discovered the steps of how to convert that saponin into real, honest-to-God, natural progesterone. Called natural because it's natural for humans. And it's that molecule. It's able to be made. So these companies that want to sell you progesterone, the pharmaceutical companies, they can't make any money selling that molecule because that cannot be patented. That's a natural molecule. You can't patent natural things. They deliberately alter this molecule. They add different acetate groups over here and a methyl group over here, and they make something that Mother Nature never made. But it may still have one or two of the effects of progesterone, enough so it will, say, convince the ovary that the other ovary is already ovulated, and they can use it then as a birth control pill. Or to hold in anything that holds in the bloody lining can be called a progestin. Doesn't matter what it is. They make them out of testosterone. They make them out of horse urine. They make them out of the real stuff. The companies have these huge farms growing the wild yam in Mexico. And they make this progesterone. And then they deliberately alter it into Provera and Megastrol. Now it no longer has the full range of activity. Plus, it's loaded with toxic side effects. That's what they're selling people. They use this same hormone to make testosterone for males. They make their estrogens out of this hormone. They can make all the corticosterones, the cortisol, the hydrocortisone, all of these things can be made out of this molecule. This is the mother of all the other molecules. They can be made by chemical factors, just the way the body. The body makes this out of cholesterol. And the body then uses this as the precursor for all the other steroid hormones. And so throughout the book, I show how this happens. You can't see this, but this is cholesterol, pregnenolone, then progesterone. From progesterone, you start making all the cortisones, and you end up making all the estrogens, and you make testosterone. But without that, you can't do that. So it has a million different roles. That's why I call it the multiple roles of a remarkable hormone. So I think you get the idea that by my experience with these women, intelligent women teaching me, I learned an awful lot about progesterone. I feel an obligation to tell people what I've learned about progesterone. And I found that it's very well absorbed through the skin, 40 to 70 times more efficiently than if you take it by mouth. There are companies that are making progesterone pills. See, anybody that wants to can buy this progesterone on the wholesale market. And some people are putting it into pills. Well, I looked up some of the studies that have been done. And the skin is 40 to 70 times more efficient, which means if I give somebody 10 or 20 milligrams by a little glop of the cream, and it's well absorbed, the doctor might then give the person 200 to 400 orally. 200, 400 milligrams orally, 10 to 20 times greater. Because when you take it orally, being fat soluble like vitamin E, beta carotene, vitamin A, and so on, it goes to the liver. And the liver excretes it in bile, metabolizes it, conjugates it, and binds it to bile, and out it goes. And the person only ends up with about 5% of what you gave him. In the meantime, you put the liver to all this extra work, and you're creating artificial metabolites that aren't the same, and you don't know what the function is. There's no reason not to use the skin. The skin is by far better. If you were to look up estrogen, like the estradiol that's in the patch, you all know about estroderm patches? You know, how many people know about it? Yeah, everybody. If you look up the weekly dose of the patch, and then turn to the PDR, the physician's desk reference, look up the same company which sells not only the patch, but they sell oral pills. The same dose, to get the same effect, taken orally, has to be 70 times higher. So therefore the skin is 70 times more efficient. Isn't that something? And this doesn't apply to everything, but it applies to these particular molecules. These are slightly smaller than a cholesterol molecule. They're fat soluble, they have the right sort of electromagnetic charge, they pass through the skin, get picked up by the fat underneath. From the fat underneath, it gets into the bloodstream, it rides around in the red blood cells. I used to have doctors who see a patient who was on the progesterone, and they'd say, well, let's do a blood test. They'd draw a serum or plasma level, and they wouldn't find much there. And they'd say, oh, this cream must be a fake. Well, this has been answered now. There's a beautiful study done in April. Some French doctors gave some women some progesterone cream, and they measured it in the bloodstream, in the serum. They also measured the change in the breast tissue. Turns out the breast tissue concentration went up 100 times, but the serum concentration didn't change at all. How did it get to the breast? By the blood. What part of the blood? On the old good red blood cells and the chylomicrons, but not in the watery plasma, because fat and water don't mix. Now, when the ovary makes it, prior to menopause, it wraps it in a protein, which makes it water-soluble. But the amount that's bound to the protein is not biologically active. Only 1 to 9% of the level the doctor finds in the serum is biologically active. The rest stays bound to the protein. So even though the doctor gets higher numbers when it's made by the ovary, he doesn't know that only 1 to 9% of it is actually working. So this is just another way of showing the doctor does the test, he draws the blood serum, the lab tells him they don't find much progesterone, the doctor draws the wrong conclusion. His conclusion is that cream isn't working. But the patient says, well, my fibrocystic breasts have turned back to normal. My bones are getting better. The doctor says, placebo. The doctor doesn't even think, I'm looking in the wrong part of the blood. Isn't that something? You see how conclusions can be made from a finding, and the conclusions are just 180 degrees wrong. But the doctor doesn't know unless he thinks about progesterone. I would say 99.9% of all the people who call me and all the patients I've seen over the years who have seen other doctors, the doctor has never once measured their progesterone level. We now have a better way. The World Health Organization for the last 5 years has been using saliva. The saliva gland, when it makes the saliva, in the process, excretes in the saliva all the corticosteroids, all the cortisone, the testosterone, the estrogen, the progesterone, the DHEA. It's all in saliva. And now they can be calculated from the level in the saliva. You can calculate what the body level is. And it only excretes the biologically active form. So you're getting a direct or a proportionate measure of the body level's biologically active hormone by using saliva. World Health Organization uses it because, number one, it's accurate. Number two, the saliva can be stored without changing the numbers. Number three, it's relevant. It's really measuring the biologically active form. Number four, it's cheaper. Number five, it's easier to get. When you're out doing nations of people and cities and colonies and tribes and people all around the world, it's much easier to get saliva specimens than it is to go out with nurses and come back with blood tests that have to be analyzed within 12 hours. Now this is available. And in the book I tell, for instance, there's a lab in California, Dr. Zava's lab, the Aeron lab, and he's been doing these tests on people for 3 years now himself. And they're very accurate, and they're much less expensive than blood tests. And he's developed a mailing kit. People can call him on a free 800 number. He may send you a mailing kit, and you collect your saliva, send it back, and he'll tell you what your estrogen and progesterone levels were. You don't even have to go to the doctor. Whoa. You get these levels, and he has enough of an explanation, so then you can show it to your doctor, and the doctor will be able to learn. You can teach your doctor. They're teachable. Not very, but But with effort, you can. Okay, now we're coming to the second part of my talk. I'm going to explain how all this came about. Remember I told you that I didn't think Mother Nature would put women to this? There has to be a reason. When I first got into it, I thought, oh, it's our bad diet. We, in America, eat way too much animal fat. We eat way too much sugars and highly refined foods. We eat way too much milk products with all the milk cow's hormones in there. And homogenized milk is a very unnatural thing. Shouldn't be drunk by grown-ups. There's no animal in the world with breasts whose children come back and continue to drink their mother's milk when they grow up. And they ask us to drink this mother's milk of this other animal. Craziness. 75% of the people around the world live where there's no milk. There's no cows. And they grow up, they got good bones, good teeth, and they beat us at the Olympics every 4 years. There's no reason to drink milk. Anyway, I thought it was diet. Then the other thing I was thinking about, it was stress. We know that the control of these hormones emanates from the hypothalamus, a center in our brain, the limbic brain. The limbic brain is this where all the stress manifests itself. All of these computer-like things for stomach acid and for blood pressure and rapid pulse and having to urinate or blushing or making urine or anything, it all comes through computers in that part of the brain. Can you imagine? You get a little embarrassed, you turn red all over. That's blushing. You don't plan to do this. It's not a thing you can tell your body to do. In fact, then you only blush down to where the blouse line is. Isn't that interesting? How does the brain know that? Imagine how clever the darn brain is. Well, at any rate, it's the brain that sends the signals to the pituitary to tell the ovary when to start the period and when to stop. And we know that at college age, when women have the most definite periods of all time, if they have some emotional stress, it can throw their periods off. A breakup of a relationship, a test that they did badly on, losing out at some silly sorority house. Whatever it is, it can mess up their periods. We also know you can take three unrelated women, have them room together during college time, and by the end of the year, their periods are all in synchrony. Isn't that something? They didn't plan that. The brain does that. So I thought, diet, stress. But still I thought, well, we've had bad diet and stress all the time the people have been on Earth. Why is this happening to people now? They're getting breast cancer, they're getting PMS, they're getting fibrocystic breast disease, they're getting more of it, they're getting it earlier, and it's more intense, and the breast cancers are worse. We're not winning the war against breast cancer. No amount of mammogram is going to do it. No amount of self-examination is going to do it. It doesn't change anything. We're getting more breast cancer. And where is all this coming from? Well, we know that estrogen makes it. We know that progesterone protects against it. Well, what's happened to progesterone when we do measurements? For instance, Dr. Jerry Lynn Pryor, chief of women's endocrinology up at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, she tested female athletes who were getting osteoporosis. 24-year-old long-distance runner breaks her leg, their hip. They have osteoporosis. And the common thought is, oh, they're running so hard, their fat level is down, they're not making estrogen. She tested that, and she found the estrogen was fine. The progesterone was gone. Lack of progesterone makes osteoporosis. See, I like that particular reference because here I was seeing people with osteoporosis and I was giving them progesterone and their bones were getting better. And she was seeing young people who have low progesterone and their bones were getting worse. So it all fits. See, isn't that nice? Well, she thought it was due to the running. Then she tested women who weren't marathon runners. And she found that by the time you're 35, 50% of the women in North America are missing their progesterone. Whoa, by 35, 50% of you aren't making the progesterone you ought to be making. And then, a study done by Dr. Peter Ellison, who was working for the World Health Organization with the saliva hormone assay, he was asked to use his little device, saliva business, to test a long-standing theory that at the time of ovulation, women make a burst of testosterone to explain their increased libido at the time of ovulation. It's kind of a male conceit, I think that it has to be testosterone to make women have a burst of some extra libido. But he took 18 normally healthy, sexually active women, and using his saliva, he measured testosterone every day for 3 cycles to see if a spurt of testosterone coincided with ovulation. But he knew that he had to find out when the ovulation time was. So he also had to do progesterone levels every day during the 3 cycles, because you never make progesterone unless you do ovulate. So to his amazement, out of these 18 women, the average age was 29, 7 of them were not ovulating. Whoa, 7 out of 18, average age 29, normal, functioning, sexually active women, didn't have any progesterone. Something strange is going on here. Now we have, I think, the full circle. We have an epidemic of illnesses related to progesterone deficiency. And I have defined a condition I call estrogen dominance that results. In other words, with the diet that we have, by the way, Dr. Ellison found that the other factor in raising women's estrogen levels higher than normal is the total amount of extra calories that we eat in this country. If we look at other countries in the third world, the amount of calories they eat barely matches the amount of physical energy that they spend. If you reduce the amount of calories you eat, estrogen levels fall. If you increase the amount of calories you eat in relation to the expenditure, estrogen levels rise. Dr. Ellison says that if the doctors believe the lab tests that come back, where it says the normal range of estrogen is truly normal, it means the doctors don't understand what's going on. Our normals are merely typical results found at this time in America. It doesn't mean it's good for people. Don't ever understand that normal in medical terms means good. Normal means you just take 100 people and see what the results are, and you find the average or the mean, and then you take two standard deviations, knock off 3.5% on either end, and that's called normal. He said the normals in the petrochemical societies are so high in comparison to the 75% of the people who are in so-called emerging or third world countries that we are the abnormals. So we have an abnormally high estrogen level because, in general, so many people eat more than their work really needs. We have a lot of workers who are not spending a lot of physical energy like they do in the third world countries. So you all have extra high estrogen, you have extra low progesterone because your follicles are not able to produce the progesterone having been damaged by these petrochemicals. We have a very strange mix, and I call it estrogen dominance, and it's due to the high estrogen from the diet, it's due to the high estrogen the doctors are giving the people. Every woman over 40 who goes to the doctor with any complaint at all is going to get an estrogen prescription. Guaranteed. The third factor is that your progesterone is low. So the balance, you see, favors the estrogen. That's why I call it estrogen dominant. I went back to Minnesota for my 40th medical school class reunion this last June. Got to talk to a lot of my colleagues and their wives. Every one of them at my age, 65, 66, they're on estrogen. Or they've had their breasts operated on, or they've had a hysterectomy, or they've had the change, their body fat has increased, and they have all these side effects. And now that I'm familiar with all this, I recognize estrogen dominance all over the place. Then my sister arranged a family meeting. There's all sorts of cousins and nieces and nephews and second cousins and second nephews and nieces that I never met in the last 40 years, and we had a get-together at somebody's cabin on a lake in Minnesota. It's a very Scandinavian thing to do. You get together at somebody's cabin on a lake, despite the mosquitoes and the algae in the water and everything. But anyway, we all got together, and it was fun to see all these kids I never had seen before. But I got talking to some of the mothers. And I talked to four or five of them. They're all 40, 45, 50 years old now. Every single one has had a hysterectomy already. Story's all the same. They hit 40, 42. They notice a little change going on in their periods. They're putting on a little more weight. Their breasts are a little more full, sometimes tender. They have headaches more. They lose interest in sex. Their body's changing, and they don't like it, what's happening. They're not sleeping as well. They go to the doctor, and he says, "Well, my dear, you're approaching menopause. You need estrogen." The doctor never measures the progesterone. What it means to me is they've been low on progesterone for 5 or 6 years already. And these things are happening. So he puts them on estrogen, and after a month or two, they come back and say, "I don't think that's working so well. I'm bloating up even more, and my breasts are even more swollen, and that's because I didn't give you enough." So he raises the estrogen level. Then she starts getting spotting and more blood and starts getting clots along with some of her periods because this is stimulating to the lining of the uterus to make more stuff. So he said, this might be cancer. We better do a D&C. So they have a D&C and he finds, guess what? Hyperplasia. He made the hyperplasia. That's the whole function of estrogens, to tell those cells to multiply, divide, make more. He made the hyperplasia. And he says, "Hyperplasia is the first sign that you're developing cancer of the uterus. You might as well, we've got an appointment for you next Wednesday to have your uterus out." Every single one of them went for it. Isn't that something? We got to change the doctors. How do we do that? We get intelligent, assertive women who understand what the problem is, and they educate the doctors. That's what we got to do. I want to add one more thing. Dr. Zappa at the Aaron Labs, I was saying, he's become very interested in this. In addition to doing progesterone levels on human saliva, he's been doing progesterone levels on all the creams that have come out. Are you aware that since I wrote my book 2 years ago, more companies are jumping in with all sorts of creams. They're advertising themselves as if they've got the progesterone cream. One is called Progerone, Progestone, HP, and all these things. He's been analyzing them for progesterone content. Turns out there's only five or six that have the progesterone that I think is physiologically normal. The cream that I've always used has 400 to 480 milligrams of progesterone per ounce. So I could tell people to use an ounce a month over 24 days, and then I know they're going to get 20 milligrams a day. You see how simple that is. Doctors will say, how does Dr. Lee know how much to give? Well, 20 milligrams a day is the normal amount that the ovary makes, and that's what I want people to have, is a physiological normal amount. And it was easy when it was that. Here's a whole bunch of creams that only have 2 milligrams per ounce. And then there's another bunch of creams that he couldn't find any. 2 milligrams spread out over 30 days is nothing. And nothing spread out over 30 days is also nothing. And there's only four or five others that did. Two of them made by Bezwecken. They have a marketing scheme. They will only sell it through doctor's prescriptions. It's not that the cream is any different or better or anything. It's perfectly fine. I have nothing against it. But what they want to do is to get it through the doctor's prescription. They want to get their foot in the door so the doctors know about their cream. Because what happened in England was, see, I've been going there the last two summers telling people about the same thing. And the women have been buying all this. There are forces in the economy that can't allow this to be just open like this and let good stuff in the hands of regular people. So they've made it prescription only in England. It's been out for years as a cosmetic at the same dose. No sign of any side effect. Never's hurt anybody. But now they made it prescription. So Bezwecken thinks it's going to maybe be prescription in the United States. So they have a marketing scheme, so you can't buy it over the counter. But the others you can buy. And they're very good. They're all fine. But the thing I wanted to tell you about is doctors have said, well, how does Dr. Lee know these things? It's circumstantial evidence. He's counting up the patients who get better. Maybe it's the diet he put them on. Maybe because it's placebo. Maybe they believe. I always, when they bring that up, I say, well, if it's placebo, it's really good placebo. You know, it works. And it's been working now for 15, 16 years. But it's true. No one has done a double-blind study until recently. Love it. There's some French doctors in Taiwan with some Taiwan doctors who had 40 female patients lined up, young, menstruating, healthy female patients lined up for some minor breast surgery. 10 days before the breast surgery, they gave a fourth of them a cream, just like the Happy PMS cream, same dose, 10 days before, and they rubbed a little dab in, making 20 milligrams a day, 25 milligrams a day for 10 days. The other group was given an estrogen cream. See what would happen. Third group was given a mix of the two creams, combination. Very good. The fourth one was given a placebo cream with no hormone in it. So we had four groups out of 40 women. They all had their surgery 10 days later, and at the time of surgery they were able to get some breast tissue. And from the breast tissue they measured the hormone concentration. So you had the placebo group, so that was the background hormone concentration, typical woman without any hormone. Those that were receiving the progesterone, their progesterone concentration went up 100 times to nice, normal, full progesterone levels, as if she had ovulated. See? The ones that got the estrogen cream, they rose like 100 times higher too. So this test right there proved that both estrogen and progesterone are well absorbed through the skin. They get to the target tissues in full physiological concentrations. He also measured, these doctors also measured, was it in the blood plasma during these days? How much was in the blood serum? And when they did that, they couldn't find any progesterone in the serum at all. The serum is a watery part of the blood. No cells, no fats, no nothing, just the watery part. The doctors have been measuring the wrong part of the blood all of these years. Isn't that amazing? Having proven that it gets from the skin to the breast tissue, it had to get there somehow. It was carried by the blood, but it was carried on red blood cell membranes and fatty things, and not in the serum. I hope you see that distinction. When the doctor says, we did a blood test, you should say, what part of the blood did you use, doctor? Well, I used the watery part. Why'd you do that? This is a fat-soluble thing we're looking for. So you can help educate the doctors this way. Right. Then they did two tests on the breast tissue, two different ways of counting how fast the breast cells in the milk ducts were multiplying. You understand, cancer is not something out there. Cancer is a normal cell which multiplies itself more rapidly than it ought to. That's what cancer is. So they're looking to see how fast the breast milk duct cells are multiplying. And they know what the normal rate was because they could see it on the women who were receiving the placebo cream. On those receiving the progesterone cream, it dropped the rate to about 15% of what the normal was. It slowed those cells down. They could take their time. The instruction of progesterone to cells all over your body is slow up, relax, don't multiply so fast, mature, differentiate, become what you're supposed to become. The estrogen women, taking women, that put estrogen on their skin, their cells were multiplying at a rate 250% faster. The message of estrogen is get to work, multiply, make more of your cells, proliferate, become more. That's what you don't want. It happens on fat cells. It happens on the breast cells. It happens on the cells inside the uterus. It happens wherever estrogen has a receptor. It stimulates cell proliferation. Unopposed by progesterone, that leads to cancer. Now we got the fourth group that had the combination cream. And the question was, who's going to win? Is the estrogen part of it going to stimulate more rapid proliferation, or is the progesterone part going to hold it down? Well, on the dose they used, progesterone won. It kept the dose, the proliferation rate down in the low normal range. Stop that estrogen from multiplying. So now we see what we've got is an epidemic of estrogen dominance going on. And the estrogen can come from the xenoestrogens. It can come from the estrogens the doctors are giving inappropriately. It can come from the more estrogen you make because you're eating more fat and more sugars and more calories than you truly need. And it can come from the fact that your ovaries are not making the right amount of progesterone. So what can you do about it? Pretty simple. You quit overeating. You quit exposing yourself to all the xenoestrogens by eating food that doesn't have animal fat in it. What do we call that food? Veggies. Plant food. We get along fine with plant food. We get all the protein, all the vitamins, all the amino acids, all the minerals. Everything comes from plants. All we need is a variety. Variety of plants. Doesn't matter. You can eat any particular plant you want as long as you eat a variety. You should eat the whole plant. Eat the leaves, the stems, the stalks, the roots, the tubers, the flowers, the fruit, the whole works, and eat them as unprocessed as possible. Eat them the way your grandparents ate vegetables. They had gardens. They went out and picked them. Okay. And then you can measure, have your doctor or have yourself, have your progesterone measured. If you are over 35, and if you are having any of these changes we're talking about, swollen breasts, fibrocystic breasts, more water retention, loss of libido, obesity, depression, low thyroid, these are all signs of low progesterone. The only way you're going to find out is to measure for it. And the measurement should be the saliva test. See, I didn't have access to the saliva test in the many years that I've been doing this. I did it just because I learned to recognize estrogen dominance. It isn't that tough. Anyone who does this any period of time, they'll pick up on it very easily. The woman herself will know. The best laboratory in the world is the woman's body herself. It's good for PMS, which is strictly estrogen dominance. Dosage has to be individualized. That's not strange. We're all individuals. We all differ. It's safe to use. The skin that's well absorbed is through the face, the neck, the hands, the upper chest, the inside of the arms, wherever there's thinner skin in large areas and plenty of capillaries. So every place you can blush, every place that your skin is relatively thin and well, if you look at palms, they tend to be pink. And the pink palms mean there's more capillaries there. Isn't that amazing? I think of the couples that I've taught over the years, advising the male part of the couple to go ahead and massage it into the female partner. And now I realize the male was getting more of it than she was. Fortunately, it doesn't hurt males at all. Males make progesterone. They need it to make their testosterone and for the adrenal glands to make cortisone. So males make it. You can measure male progesterone levels. And you'll find that when the woman has this follicle damage I'm talking about, the amount of progesterone she makes is less than that of a male. So it's a big difference. It's not like shades of gray. It's not hard to find. So the saliva levels are now very easy to do, and progesterone can be given, and people will learn as they do this. So here we have the whole story of how I got, it helps the bones. That led me to learn more and more about progesterone, things that I learned from the patients, and that has led me then to look for the causes of why a woman would be low in progesterone. And now we have the reason for the low progesterone, the fact that the ovaries have been damaged by petrochemicals in our environment. So perhaps that should be enough for a while, but we can answer questions. So thank you very much.
This concludes the presentation by Dr. Lee. A separate audio tape is available, which contains approximately 1 hour of unedited questions posed to Dr. Lee by women in the audience following his speech, along with his very authoritative and frank answers to all of the questions.